be found at kboo.fm. This is KBOO Portland. It's 10:59 and a handful of seconds in the AM. It is the, fourth Friday of the month, which means it's almost time for Pacific Underground, featuring interviews, documentaries, and real-time coverage of issues affecting Asians and Pacific Islanders in the Northwest. Yes. And KBOO can bring you this kind of programming because of the support of the community. That's you, the listening public, who have taken that step to become active members of the KBOO Foundation. And if, for those who haven't yet, you can correct that oversight at kboo.fm. You click on the yellow letters that spell out the word donate. Other members of our community who are getting involved in the way that made sense for them. Well, I am honored, privileged, and contractually obligated to tell you about how KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listeners, members, and support from Portland Underground Graduate School, a local independent learning community offering courses and workshops for continuing lifelong learning. Scholarships and other tuition opportunities are available. Course options and more information online at pugspdx.com. And with that, here is Pacific Underground.
Good morning.
It's still morning, yeah.
It's 11 a.m. I don't know, that's sort of that early afternoon sort of thing.
It's still morning because I just woke up.
Yeah. You still don't have coffee. Just finished coffee. Yeah. This kind of shows what kind of lazy morning we have.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you are tuned into KBOO Community Radio, and you're listening to Pacific Underground, and you are listening to Jenna and V talk about how they're apparently still waking up, even though it's almost afternoon. And we're joined by Jake. Afternoon, morning, Jake.
Hello.
Okay, so let's just get into it. Today, we are going to be talking about Crazy Rich Asians, and because that's what all the Asians are talking about in this last week since it came out. We're all going to also be talking about Asian Americans.
So in fair warning, there may be a few spoilers. Hopefully, keep those at a minimum.
Oh, no, I say let's go
full in. That's going to be hard.
No, let's go full in spoilers.
Okay. Yeah, so just, heads up, listeners, tune out if you haven't seen it or, you know,
and if you don't want to see it, but you want to know what happened, tune in.
Yeah.
Because we're going to talk about it. Because, we've all seen it.
There's just so much to unpack.
Yeah, we all have, feels.
Yes.
About
complicated feels.
Complicated feels. And so we're going to talk about that. And then other Asian American and Asian media that we are consuming. Because, there's media out there that's, less cringy. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way.
Or more cringy.
Yeah. Sometimes you want to dial up the cringe.
Okay, so should we just go over, how should we do this? How do we start the complicated feels discussion about Crazy Rich Asians?
We could talk about the landscape that it's in, because everybody's talking to this now, the Joy Luck Club. But when Joy Luck Club came out, it was really the only cultural thing representing Asian Americans.
And so it was very tokenized. Years ago.
And it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But now it's not sort of occurring in a vacuum as much. So there's not so much pressure on this movie to succeed, because people would say that, if this doesn't do well, then people just won't come for a narrative. Audiences don't care about Asian American narratives or whatever. It's got so much weight on it, but I don't know. That's kind of a setting it up to fail. So
it's still a big deal.
It's a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
I mean, it's a big deal just because of the size of the studio that picked up the movie, it doesn't make the movie itself like inherently great just because it was made by, you know, with millions and millions of dollars behind it. But Crazy Rich Asians definitely like is a big deal in just the sense that it's like, wow, a major motion picture studio decided to basically put an all Asian cast in a movie and then tell an Asian American Singaporean story.
Yeah.
That like reminds us of Titanic or something. Like.
And Cinderella.
Yeah, and Cinderella.
And Romeo and Juliet.
Right.
And like all the classics.
Yeah. Right. So it's like this very formulaic, if you're not into the rom-com thing, because of all the things that are usually cringy about rom-coms, it's like this just fits into the formula and you're probably not going to like it either. Because it's so, yeah, there's so many problems with it.
Right. It doesn't sort of like break with the genre, but like, I guess it's a better example of the genre than most.
Okay. So Jake, when did you go see it?
I went to see it, was it two nights ago that you went? I went on the same night that V went.
On Wednesday, so two nights ago.
Okay, and then I saw it on Tuesday. Okay, so it's still all very fresh for us. Yeah. Okay, so if people are listening, they're like, what are they talking about? So we're talking about Crazy Rich Asians, which was a book that came out in 2013. And in case
Kevin Kwan, I believe.
Yeah, Kevin Kwan. And it was a...
Who was interviewed by Dime Roberts on KBOO. Shout out to Dime.
Go Dime.
For her stage and studio show, if everybody wants to hear talk from the director. I haven't listened to it yet, but I hear it's good.
And then like in 2018, last week, it gets turned into this major motion picture. And I think for like non-Asia America, it's like, oh, look at this movie that's coming out. Okay, and they kind of think it's like cool. And then when you like dive into the Asian American discussion around it, it's like, oh my God, there's all these different feels and sides and people being very strongly against it.
Yeah.
Because of its lack of representation. Mm-hmm. It's called Crazy Rich Asians, but I would call it Crazy Rich Singaporean Chinese or something. Like it just doesn't represent all of Asia, and it's very much promoting capitalism and like all the imperialism of China, like all that stuff. Okay, so that's what's going on. That's what we're talking about. That's
I feel like it's more of a class movie than a race movie, or like an Asian quote unquote movie.
Right. It reminded me of that one that came out a couple years ago with Leonardo DiCaprio. That was
The Great Gatsby. I mean, that's what everyone's comparing it to. I mean,
yeah.
The Wedding. The Wedding was just like a replica of The Great Gatsby.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
The jazz, everybody's swing dancing.
The flapper dresses. Right. Like, it's definitely a classic.
Yeah, when I saw that scene, I was like, oh, this is, you know, this movie is not meant to make you feel great in the, like, representation, real life world. It's, like, total capitalistic escapism.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, how many people would come out and watch a movie called, like, Poor Southeast Asians, you know, like no one's gonna do that.
Dude, they don't even want to come out to see like middle class Asians. Like Better Luck Tomorrow, I'd say that was one of those films that came out like in the, what was that, early aughts,
late 90s,
late 90s, and people didn't come out to see that.
I was in college when that came out, I think.
And granted, it wasn't like a rom-com.
It was really dark.
Yeah, it was very dark. I mean,
have you seen that one, V?
I don't think
Spoiler, John Cho gets murdered and buried by his high school friends. And this was like a totally real story that happened near where I grew up. Anyhow.
In Southern California.
I mean, that movie had money behind it, mm-hmm. and people didn't come out to see it. People want to see pretty people falling in love and having all the money in the world.
I think that's universal. We love these extravagant displays of wealth. All these shows that are like Cribs.
We have to keep in mind it's a blockbuster. It's made to attract viewers of all kinds. It's got to be pretty. It's got to be fun. It's a rom-com.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I still like Constance Wu. Even in all the criticism of it, I'm like, okay, can we talk about the things we liked?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved seeing Constance Wu because to me, she's the mom on Fresh Off the Boat. So to hear her speaking with like her Asian American accent, I was like, what? Mm-hmm. Whoa.
She rocked it.
What happened to the mom? Yeah. She totally did.
I loved her.
She's really good at
And I don't like Fresh Off the Boat. I did not like Fresh Off the Boat. Yeah. But I loved Constance Wu in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really liked how...
I wanted to like Fresh Off the Boat. I stopped watching after...
Okay, we'll get into that. So. But let's keep talking about the things that we liked about this movie.
Okay.
Real quick. I will say, okay, so I like Constance Wu. I like me Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah.
Oh, she's so good.
I like the food culture, like the street food scene was great.
Oh, yeah.
The dumpling scene.
The dumpling scene.
The kitchen scene.
Right, because that's a culture, that's a part of that Southeast Asian culture that like, or Asian culture that is less dependent on class, right? Like, that's where everybody mixed. You have like, you know, kind of middle class Singaporeans or whatever in that scene. But just, you know, thinking of, you know, some of those communities that, food and getting together over that and meeting friends, it's a big part of the culture. And
I love the jokes that happen at, like, at the beginning of the movie where where Constance Wu is just like, yeah, I love to eat. And I'm like, yes, girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Do the eating. Yeah. And I loved the part right in the beginning where they're in the bar and then what do they call it? Radio One.
Oh yeah, Singapore or like Radio One Asia or something like that.
Radio One, yeah, something.
Where it's just like the
totally
gossip
got
field.
Like ninja like snapped and like all this gossip circle started. Yeah. Seeing that visualized with the like all the emojis and like text circles and everything was crazy.
And I felt like that part. There's one thing that I really loved about the movie in which they didn't have to explain certain things. Like, I felt like the movie was really made to really be understood by Asian viewers. Like, there's one text that popped up during that whole, like, you know, frenzy of, you know, this word is getting out that he's seeing someone and it's spreading all over the world. And there's one text that popped up that said, like, oh, looks like an ABC. You're not going to know what an ABC is unless you're Asian and American, you know? And ABC is American-born Chinese.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I liked all those subtle things because it was unapologetic like that. Because those are the things that I am really liking about representation these days when it comes to mainstream media with, like, Asian Americans, is that there's more media that's being made for Asian Americans. So it's, like, less explaining. I feel like... Okay, let's just talk about my new favorite Netflix binge. Okay,
oh my
God. we got someone staring at us. Hey, Tabitha, come on in. Tabitha, come on in. Tabitha, joining the show. Tabitha also saw the Crazy Rich Asians. Okay, but we've all been like kind of obsessing over Kim's Convenience, which isn't Asian American, it's Asian Canadian.
I love Kim's Convenience.
And so, okay, so we were kind of talking earlier about how Fresh Off the Boat is kind of... It's not for everybody. There's a lot of things where I feel like it's not made solely for Asian America. I feel like there's a lot of trying to like...
It's a little bland sort of...
And it's trying to...
respectability politics.
Yeah, explaining too much to like white America what's going on. And I'm like, just talk to us Asians.
Just be Asian. Just live your life.
And I feel like that's what Kim's Convenience does. Like, if you haven't seen Kim's Convenience, it's on Netflix. It's about this Korean Canadian family that owns a convenience store.
It's better than Fresh Off the Boat.
It's, I mean, like, no offense to Constance Wu and Ali Wong and The Round of Heart, but it's so good.
People should check out.
Yeah, because it just unapologetically talks to Asians. It's so good. Yeah, but I feel like it makes you feel more seen. When you're like, they don't stop and explain. They just, like, have their jokes. And sometimes it's, like, okay to mention the, like, cringy things. And, like, that they don't have to explain it all. It's, that's what makes you feel seen.
Yeah.
Is there, like, a smelly lunch at school scene?
No, because she's, like, the kids on
the kids
show
are older.
In their 20s.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I haven't seen it, so.
So it's, like, there's less, like, of the stereotypical things that you would see. Like, I feel like Fresh Off the Boat really did that in their first season, especially. They talked on all the stereotypes and, like, gave you that experience. But this one really is just, like, no, let's just talk about.
They're just Korean.
Yeah.
And they just let them be Korean.
And they own a convenience store.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's this community hub that, like, all these people come in and, like, sort of like the Cheers bar sort of community that, like, but for immigrant communities in, like, cities like Toronto, like, those markets, those new markets.
What I like about it, I guess the difference between I see like between Fresh Off the Boat and Kim's Convenience, like Fresh Off the Boat very much touches on the otherizing experience of being in America. Mm-hmm. While Kim's Convenience, because it comes from such a centralized point of view from the Korean American family, there's mm-hmm. less of like looking in on them as being otherized, and it's like almost looking how
this is just how our family is.
Yeah, how the Korean-American dad or the Korean-Canadian dad almost otherizes others.
Right.
You know, all the time. He's always having to, like, point out the otherness. And mm-hmm. I think that's pretty much, like, a very big part of the immigrant experience. Like, especially, like, if you're born here but your parents mm-hmm. are from someplace
yes.
else.
Yeah.
And then you have to hear them otherizing other people. You're just like, stop!
Oh, my gosh.
And the dad always does that. He's always talking about Japan attack Korea in 1910. It's like...
Oh, my dad.
He won't like, he'll call the police on Japanese cars that are parked outside of the store.
No, he doesn't.
He's like, Dad, don't call the police. He's like, but 1910, Japan attacked Korea. So great. Like, we don't forget, dude.
Yeah. And they just like go to church and it's like this totally normal thing. Like everything is presented as completely normal.
Normalized.
And so that's really good. That's what I love about that show.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's my next show I'm binging.
Do it.
Yeah, there's this concept that I was reading on a post by Viet Thanh Nguyen, the Vietnamese academic and scholar or whatever, that talks about how, centering the conversation on like, oh, if Crazy Rich Asians doesn't make it or Fresh Off the Boat doesn't make it, like, then people aren't going to want another. It sort of operates from this position of scarcity, which really sort of like tokenizes ourselves. And just sort of like, if we can't be excellent or if we can't have the best show ever, then we don't deserve to be there. But like, mm-hmm. we deserve mediocre shows and we deserve like...
White fluff, people get mediocre and bad movies and shows all the time.
Yeah, I saw Crazy Rich Asians with Nerd Albert.
Oh, okay.
Nerd Albert, guest of the show.
Former guest of the show.
And he, he made a really good point that like, because I was like, oh, what'd you think of the movie? You know, and he was like, you know, it's not like the greatest movie. It's mm-hmm. a good movie. Mm-hmm. He's like, but I think we're all allowed to be really excited about it because we're operating from a place of scarcity as opposed to plenitude.
There aren't many points for Asian representation.
And he was like, so the fact, he's like, our goal is to try to get to this place of plenitude mm-hmm. where like that movie doesn't have to be a big deal because there's just so much, right? Mm-hmm. There's so much, but so for now it's like, he's like, you know, let's give it to the people who want to be excited. Because, okay, I will say this was the most exciting part for me. It was not the actual movie. Mm. But when I went to the movie theater, there was a ton of older Asians in the theater. And I was like,
what? You wouldn't expect to see in a blockbuster, right?
Yeah.
What are the aunties doing here?
And my parents never go to the theater to see a movie. But my parents were kind of thinking about actually going to a movie theater to see Crazy Rich Asians. It was like, what?
See, it's just like when Joy Luck Club came out. It was
they
like,
saw it before me.
Yeah, all
I was like, oh,
all man. Asian females were required to go to the movie theater in 1993.
Yeah.
To go see Joy Luck Club. It was like such mm-hmm. a big deal. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember when the VHS came out, I was like required to watch that, and I watched it over and over again and watched my girl Tamlin.
My parents...
Tamla Tomita, friend of the show. She'll be on here one day.
Oh, I hope so. When Joy Luck Club came out on VHS, we had a family watching of that movie. We all gathered in the living room. We watched Joy Luck Club.
Wow.
Man, it meant so much.
Wasn't that the last major Hollywood production to feature an all-Asian cast?
25 years
ago. Get it together, Hollywood. Get it together.
And you know what's interesting is to... What's kind of... Or I guess not interesting or something is to... realize how many people in that movie are still the like Asians that we see in the movies today, and there mm-hmm. actually hasn't been that much of an increase in like 25 years. You're like, oh man, why is Constance Wu our like one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh my god, and like Ming-Na is still also one of the ones,
right?
Like she's Wait, good stuff, but come on.
I may have been wrong about Joy Luck Club, Memoirs of a Geisha. But that had...
That is not the same.
Oh, that one was cringy.
Okay, first of all, that was written by, like, a Hakujin guy.
That's true.
And it's all about the Hakujin gays. Like, my eyes just rolled so hard. But hey, we got some music.
Yeah. We have a couple songs from the Crazy Rich Asian soundtrack.
Such a good soundtrack.
That we thought we wanted to feature on here. So,
there's a Chinese cover of Coldplay's Yellow.
There is. Yeah. Yeah. And it was like a very intentional choice where the main producer like reached out to Coldplay, and like you can see the letter online where he like asked, because he was like, oh, get it, Yellow. And like he talked all about representation. It's this whole long thing.
I did not know that.
Do the googly on the social
media. I knew it was intentional.
I was kind of
hoping
that. But
this is Catherine Ho. Let's have a listen to it. I love how like Tabitha right now is like dancing.
You can't see it because we're not live streaming, but
Tabitha loves Coldplay.
Yeah. I do love Coldplay, and to me, this song is one of the most romantic songs to me. And so when that song played during the wedding scene, sorry, spoiler warning.
We'll have lots of spoilers.
I was trying not to think like, oh, did they choose the song because of Yellow? But I was thinking, it is a pretty romantic song too. So I'm really hoping that's why they chose to do a cover of that song.
I'm telling you, look at the thing online. Okay, wait, can we talk about also with the Crazy Rich Asians? Okay, so we've all talked about like the things we liked about it and that it is, you know, capitalism run amok. Okay, but let's talk about who wasn't in the movie, because that's the important part of the discussion of like why people are very much against Crazy Rich Asian. Because there's only one kind of Asian when they're saying Crazy Rich Asians.
Pale-skinned East Asians.
Wealthy.
Mm-hmm, and wealthy.
Pale-skinned East Asians, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you all see you see glimpses of the maids and the servants, and they're all the darker skinned.
All brown.
Yeah, all brown skinned. Like, the private guards, they were, brown skinned. And I'm not really sure if they had any speaking roles, except maybe one when the maid asks Nick and Rachel to go talk to the grandmother. One speaking line for the brown Asians.
Right? And so it's like
the Indian guards didn't even say anything. They were just like looming
their
imposingly.
knife sword guns.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like that scene, Awkwafina's character and Rachel were kind of making fun of the security guards, because they were like, whoa, your friend. And they're supposed to be intimidating, but I felt like the comments that they were saying about them
didn't Awkwafina say like, did you put into your GPS like jungle? That juxtaposition was just like cringeworthy for me.
Yeah.
I mean, she was cringeworthy.
There was about Awkwafina that was cringeworthy there.
Right. Yeah.
I like her, but.
But yeah, there's just like so there's a lack of representation for like Singapore in its whole, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I'm not Singaporean, so I'm not going to try to claim that. I understand, you know, but I do recognize that
there's a lot of great critiques about,
you know, a certain ethnicity of people who have taken over Singapore, right? Mm-hmm. Like the Chinese, you know, so you see, like, it's just about like these one people, but they do, this is not a great part of the movie, but I'm glad that they didn't ignore that.
Yeah.
That it's like, hey, look, everybody who's in the background, you know, and I was just like, oh man, well, I wonder,
a sequel has been greenlit. Maybe I haven't read the books, but maybe they'll focus a little bit more on the staff.
One
who knows?
Probably not. Yeah. Highly unlikely.
Oh man, what if they make the Help Asian version?
The what?
The Help. A few years ago, there was the movie The Help, but it was about the black servants of in the South. But it was also criticized because there was a little
savory.
Yeah, white savory. But maybe there'll be the Help Asian version.
Yeah, maybe there'll be
I'm going to write a fanfic about
a Hong Kong Chinese sort of nobility that takes pity on the domestic helpers.
Oh, God. So we're talking
about representation, y'all.
Yeah.
So we're talking about this Crazy Rich Asian thing. Is this actually increasing representation in your opinion? Let's go around. I want to know what everyone's opinion is.
I think it can. I mean, it's like, I don't think it's intended to, because it's for that specific group to be represented, which, relative to the majority, sure, I think they do need representation, but like, there's a lot of people that they need to bring up with them too, so. I don't know. I'm skeptical.
Yes and no. I mean, all these questions, it's always complex. But it's great that there are so many Asian faces on the screen, but they're also concentrating on the Singaporean Asian experience, I feel like, and not so much on the Asian American experience. I'm really hoping the sequels maybe take place a little bit more in America, and maybe focus a little bit more on the Asian American experience.
I think, yes, absolutely yes, it's increasing representation. This story is based in Singapore about a Singaporean an ethnic Chinese family of an upper class. Like, that is the storyline, that's the plot line. They have to cast according to the storyline. And I think what's more kind of creating awareness around is like the differences between Asian Americans and then Asians, because there is that difference, and you don't really see that storyline on screen that often. It's like Constance Wu's character goes through the entire movie being like, I'm Asian, but I'm not Asian enough, mm-hmm. which is something that we all experience all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's so refreshing to see that on
screen. Ethnic imposter syndrome.
Yeah, I mean, you don't look at an African-American film and ask, like, where are all the Nigerians in this film? You know, it's just like, mm-hmm. this is what makes sense for this movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, I think that unfortunately, yes, it does increase representation, right? Because like anything we can get does do something.
Yeah.
I think it just is, it's like, it's just another sign of how capitalism works and how we have to be constantly navigating like white supremacy, right? Like, we don't want we didn't want Joy Luck Club to be as big of a deal as it was.
Right.
Because there was a lot of cringy things about that one too, but it still is a big deal. Like the Karate Kid, we don't want it to be a big deal, but it still is, because we're like, wow, they used actual Asians in
Pat
it,
Maria.
Right? And not white people in yellow face.
Yeah, but yeah. Like Asians still are like, oh, boo. But you know, we still like, you know, Karate Kid, and that's just how it goes. And so it's like, it's kind of like fresh off the boat. Like, it's not the least cringy, and I wish it was something else. But at the same time, I'm just like, hey, it's
hey,
just
Asian and, faces.
And let's just all be happy that Rachel, the main lead, was casted with an Asian actress.
Yeah, because they didn't necessarily want to do that.
Hollywood wanted a white actress.
Yes.
Oh, they did?
You know, they wanted the Scar Jo. They always wanted
oh man,
and how much more boring would that have been?
Yes.
Right.
You would have missed out on all of the nuances.
Yes.
Yeah.
The mahjong scene would not have
Yeah.
Okay. That was such a powerful scene.
Yeah.
Which I had to Google.
The hope is that Mahjong will now become the new, like, Asian American cool hip thing.
Yeah.
Because of that movie.
Instead of pool halls, young Asian American kids are going to be
learn Mahjong.
Y'all want to come over and play Mahjong?
I do have a full Mahjong set if y'all want to come
over. We're
going to
do
me.
This.
All right.
We will do this. Okay. So, yeah, I do think it's unfortunate that's how Hollywood works, is that, you know, it's like the stories that are going to get made. It's not as though other people haven't tried to pitch their books and pitch their movies, mm-hmm. you know, and this is the one we all collectively as Asian America were like, let's do this one, right? It was the one that, like, all the executives and all the studios are willing to put their money yeah. behind, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, yes, of course it's a story written by a dude mm-hmm. about, like, the Cinderella story that makes a lot of, like, mm-hmm. femmes cringe, you know, and it's about, like, the...
And all the Asian men are cringy. And
yeah.
yeah.
In the film.
Yeah.
They're so bro-y.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're so bro-y.
Oh, whatever. But a little bit of representation is better than...
Zero.
Than nothing. Hey, we got another song. Jake, tell us about it.
Okay, so on the whole tip of it being like The Great Gatsby, the song from the... I'm not going to attempt to say it, from Jasmine Chan in the wedding scene. It's a very big band, jazzy number.
On the Crazy Rich Asians.
On the Crazy Rich Asians.
Soundtrack. Okay, let's have a listen to Jasmine Chan.
I'm also chair dancing to this song.
Go Jasmine Chen.
All right.
Was it actually her in the movie that was performing the song?
No clue. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Pacific Underground. Today we are talking about Crazy Rich Asians and...
Crazy Rich representation.
Yeah, Crazy Rich representation for sure. And just Asian American representation in mainstream media today. And we have a special guest. Jake, why don't you introduce our special guest?
Okay, and so today we have a special guest, Suba, who's from Singapore, and who's on the line for us. And we just called to ask her about, she hasn't seen the movie yet, so fair warning. We'll try to minimize the spoilers, but talk a little bit about Singapore and the other communities that are there.
Suba, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thanks.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Thanks so much for coming on. Yeah.
Of course.
Could you introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your connection to
Singapore,
the community?
Sure. My name is Subhashini Ganesan, and, I've lived in Portland since 2001 with a little stint away, but I've been there for a bit, and I am a classical South Indian dancer. I do a form called Bharatanatyam, which is a 2,000-year-old dance form that comes from the south of India. Yeah, and I'm both an artistic director and choreographer in Portland. I also run a nonprofit organization, Neo Expressive Works, which celebrates and supports multicultural independent performing artists in our city. So almost 200 independent artists work out of the space, dancing, doing residencies, performances. And I'm also the creative laureate of Portland. So Portland, being as weird as it is, we are the only city in America that has the title of creative laureate, which is like a poet laureate, right? But it's being an ambassador for all of the arts, which, as you know, is a really easy job. And so it's a 2-year appointment. So those are the things that I do in Portland in terms of my relationship to Singapore. I was born and raised there, and I went to school, made it through my A-levels, which is high school here, and then came to university in New York State in 91, and back and forth. Oh, wow. But have lived in the States. Yeah.
So much like the director Kevin Kwan, or writer of the movie,
I didn't have to do national service, right?
right. College roommate Sehong was a Chinese Singaporean who immediately after graduating from Yale had to go to the national service to serve in the army.
Yeah.
Do they also have mandatory service like in Korea, like in South Korea? Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a 2-year mandatory service for all males. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. And so the demographics of Singapore are, it's about 3/4 70, Chinese?
Yeah. A little over 70% Chinese.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then we have, about, 14% Malaysians, and about 7-8% Indians. And then what we call others are the rest, which is Eurasians, as they were called then, and expats from all across the world. So that those three populations are the most significant still, with a smattering of other races across the world. Yeah.
Right. So one thing I found interesting about Singapore is it has multiple official languages and a little bit of official representation in the constitution. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there are 4 official languages, right? English is the most prevalently used, and the reason English is used and we go to school in English is that we were, when we became a nation state, it made sense to have English as the official language.
Right. And
the Chinese were speaking in their dialects, the Indians have their own dialects, so a way for everybody to communicate together. But Tamil, which is a South Indian regional language, Mandarin, which of course is the official written language, and Malay, which is the language of the peninsula, are the other 3 official languages. So you can write to the government in those 4 languages, and it is important to receive communication back in that language.
Huh. Wow. Is English the official language because of the large British influence? And
you have to understand that Singapore was founded by a British East India Company person, right? Sir Stamford Raffles, who founded Singapore in 1819, founded it as a good place for it to be a port between all the Eastern trade that they were doing and down to England. So until then, it was a sleepy Malaysian fishing village. And so really the beginnings of Singapore is an English country, basically. All the architecture is based on East India Company architecture. So English was, and also the peoples who moved there realized that trade is really important. And the traders they were working with, of course, are the English. Unlike, for example, in Indonesia, you had the Dutch influence. So Dutch is spoken there, but because England is what colonized that area, English was the default official language and the language of commerce.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, we're talking about representation on our show today about media representation. And so I'm just wondering, as someone here in the United States, do you find that there is some sort of representation, whether it's in indie films? Like, what is it that you consume to feel seen, or is there just a lack of that altogether for you?
Well, I mean, I have always searched and I always find representation of what I need and of who I am, right? So I'm considered South Asian in this country, but if you were to look at, say, parts of Europe, they would consider me Asian. So Pakistanis and Indians are considered Asians in England. We are South Asians in America. So it's always a kind of a dicey thing, right? Representation. Mm-hmm. And I've never grown up in any country where I've been the majority. As a Tamil-speaking Indian, I have always been a minority in Singapore, and I am also that in this country. So I think always had this way of seeking out representation. Who looks like me? Who can I use as my role model? How do I work to be successful? And how? And now in the spaces that I am, I look at how can I be a good storyteller, a person to empower those around me who are seeking that same kind of representation. Does that answer your question?
Yes, but I'm also curious though, as I'm just wondering, yeah. You know, so you're saying what I'm hearing is that you kind of, you know, you have to create that a lot of the times. Because I just know that as Crazy Rich Asians kind of came up, it really made me start to crave other forms of representation. I'm like, that's how I came across Kim's Convenience on Netflix. I was just like, I want to find more and take more effort, you know, to find these TV shows, even if they're small, and just stuff like that. And so I've just sort of been asking people like, oh, what are the movies that you watch? And is YouTube is what's helping you, or, you know, are there podcasts people are consuming?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, as agents, I think we also always have to be creating it, but we are creating it. So what is out there, I wonder?
Right. Well, I am a kind of a bad person to ask because I spend so much time in performance and creating work and curating work that I don't spend that much time watching television or media, which is probably why I haven't gone and seen the movie yet, right? I'm wanting to go, but I still haven't made the time to go.
But there is still representation maybe here in Portland, like as you are part of more of like that theater scene. That's like one thing. Oh, let's get another shout out to like Demay Roberts, like part of, you know, Asian American Pacific Islanders feeling scene here in Portland is like her theater company for sure.
Theater Diaspora.
Theater Diaspora. Are there local, you know, artistic creative spaces that you see here in Portland where people can, you know, find that kind of representation?
Right. You mentioned, you know, New Expressive Works. You support a lot of POC artists.
I was just thinking of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me go with some of the ones that have been around for a long time that should be mentioned. For example, in the South Asian world, the dance and music culture is super rich in Portland. And while there's a huge representation in Hillsborough and Beaverton and Tigard, there's actually a large South Asian community who do live and participate in many things in Portland. In March, actually, I created a South Asian arts festival, South Asian American arts festival, and apparently it was the first of its kind in Portland, and it was really a gathering of socially responsible and activist-minded artists who are thinking about what does it mean to be South Asians, how do we represent our art as contemporary and as South Asian at the same time. So there are lots of artists. If you, I think, Google South Asian American Arts Festival in Portland, there are many artists who live and work in Portland. And then Kalakendra and Rasika are two curating organizations who bring in Indian, I think, mostly musicians and artists from international locations to be represented in Portland. And Unit Sozo is a Japanese contemporary taiko movement and performing group made up of Michelle Fuji and Toru Watanabe. And they actually teach classes in New Expressive Works on Mondays. And I run a space called, my dance school is called Natya Lila, and I teach and I create work. So this idea of having contemporary Bharatanatyam or South Indian dance representation in the city, and that we're I'm really working to bring visibility to all of our art forms and to remind our performing arts community in Portland that it's important to think of what is often called traditional arts, as not just artists who are ambassadors of this cultural art form from another country, but that we're here and we're making extremely relevant and accessible and important work in the arts that speaks to this time and speaks to our sociopolitical identities.
That's great. And so, I want to remind people to look up the South Asian Arts Festival. And where are you on the socials if people want to?
I have a Facebook page called Creative Laureate of Portland, where folks can follow me. New Expressive Works also has a page. And I'm also on Instagram as New Expressive Works. I'm trying to keep up with the times, you know.
All right. And so I want to be, you know, respectful of your time. You said you had respectful of your time since you said you had a commitment at 11:45.
Yeah, I'm walking in. Yes. Yes.
So thanks so much for speaking with us, Suba.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate
it. I hope it was helpful in your conversation. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we'll talk again soon.
Thank you. And coming up next, we got another song.
Yeah, so...
Also from Crazy Rich Asians.
So we have a song from Jacintha called The Look of Love. It's a jazz piece by an Indian Singaporean musician that Sub actually... connected me to.
Oh wait, so this one isn't from
the
soundtrack.
Oh, I'm wrong.
No, this is sort of alternate, sort of it's part of the wider conversation, you know, culturally.
Cool. The music that should have been on the soundtrack, maybe.
we're curating our own sort of like decanons and soundtracks. So
yeah. Well, let's listen to Jacintha with The Look of Love.
The look of love is in your eyes. A look your smile can disguise. The look of love, it's saying so much more than just words could ever say, and what my heart has heard, well, it takes my breath away. I can hardly wait to hold you, feel my arms around you. How long I have waited, waited just to love you.
Man, so much chair dancing this morning.
Beautiful voice.
Yeah. But the songs that we've been playing, I guess with the exception of the, I'm going to destroy the name, Wo Yao Ni Di Ai, the thing that I was noticing in the Crazy Rich Asians is about how many covers there are. And even though it's translated and sung in the native language of whatever country, but it, I guess to me, it also shows like the white supremacy and how much that Western pop culture just spread over the world. And now that it's sort of become culture in Asia, and I know that they're making their own music, like with the explosion of K-pop in the last few years, but
cringy too.
Yeah. It's also I also feel like that's very much model based after like Western pop stardom and such, but well, another discussion for another time. But I don't know, I personally would like more music to make it over here that isn't a cover of like Coldplay or
like a Western form.
I mean, Crazy Rich Asians was just a bunch of compromise. This is like what I see, right? And it was like who was compromised was like that. There's a lot of people who feel extremely erased and like extremely dismissed as a result of this movie, you know. So it's like, oh, let's give visibility to quote unquote Asians, but it's mm-hmm. really only going to be the wealthiest Asians, and let's throw like the brown Asians like under the bus, you know, and that's the compromise. And like the music was, let's not do music that is original to Asia. Let's do palatable mm-hmm. white mm-hmm. music that are, yeah. I thought the covers were better than the original. I mean, yeah. like, I mean, I hate Coldplay, but I liked the yellow.
like, yeah. They were good covers.
Yeah, they were really good covers.
Right. So, yeah, I just want to keep acknowledging that, like, Crazy Rich Asians, like, we're like, yay, but we're also like, ew.
Yeah.
Like, that it's really complicated. Yeah. And that, like, I hope, you know.
Like, I'm glad it's out there.
But, yeah. I mean, it's out there, but, and I hope non-Asians, like, understand that, too. Like, please don't just, like, look at this and go,
oh
look at
Asia.
The model minorities, like, mm-hmm. have done so well, and, like, mm-hmm. everything is great. It's like, no, we, as mm-hmm. a community, are talking about how this is, like, erasing the struggle of, like, what's really going on. And, like
this is good, but we can do better.
Like, people are talking about Crazy Rich Asians and how exciting Asians are, and Asians, but I'm like, okay, well, are we also talking about ICE and, like, Southeast Asians?
Yeah,
and, like,
last week it was the largest deportation
of
Cambodians in the history of the U.S.
That's the question, is, like, are movies like this going to bring attention to where that representation
also, the is literal made. Erasure of the Pacific Islands because of global warming.
Mm.
Yeah. So maybe, as we were saying before, if we were to have a plentitude, unfortunately.
Instead of a scarcity.
That's the model. Mm-hmm. But to help people, because I've been trying to, like, figure out more stuff. Cause I'm like, there has to be more than just, because, like, once Kim's Convenience and Fresh Off the Boat, like, all the things, even if they aren't the greatest. Like, once they came out and I've been watching that, I'm like, wow, I do not really want to watch TV shows or movies or podcasts or whatever where I don't feel seen, because now it's just painful to, like, watch other stuff. So
you notice the erasure a lot more.
Yeah, you feel it. Yeah. You're like, I want to be talked to. So I was thinking we could talk a little bit about where people can turn to. As we were just talking about Suba, like, if you want to be seen, what are the things you're doing? So one of the things I've been listening to a lot recently is Saturday School Podcast, which is this podcast run by these two Asian Americans who are experts in Asian American films. And they have 4 seasons out already, and they just talk about, each one is about, like, a different Asian American film. And so they're all, like, indie films, and I was never into that scene. And so I'm learning so much, because they just talk about, like, all these movies, like, you know, like, people who are now famous before they were famous, and, like, how that influenced, like, the Asian American, like, film scene, and, you know, because these are the directors and stuff that eventually get their stuff made. Mm-hmm. So Saturday School Podcast, because it's, like, Saturday School, it's, like, playing off the idea that you should go to Chinese school on Saturday when all your friends were doing stuff. You're going to Saturday school.
Oh, I did not.
Yeah. And so it's like, hey, now instead of learning Chinese, let's learn about movies. Yeah, so I learned about Randall Park, apparently has a whole bunch of shorts that he did right before he got famous that are on YouTube. They're so funny. They're so good.
It's more edgy than Fresh Off the Boat.
Oh, yeah. And so,
oh, that's a low bar.
But Saturday School Podcast is part of a collective of Asian American podcasts that are out there. And you can go on to podcastpotluck.com. And there's, like, a whole bunch of different podcasts made by Asian Americans. So there's, like, Woo-hoo. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim. Collaboration has a podcast on there. There's the Angry Asian Man one, They Call Us Bruce. Yeah, and, like, Fresh Creatives, and there's one about the Korean Drama Podcast. Like, so there's a whole bunch of ones out there. That'd be my one recommendation.
There's also this new one I wanted to give a plug to, Balik Bayan, by a former co-founder of the show, Alan Motacillo.
Only two episodes
out. Check it out.
What's his about?
It's about Filipino-American or Filipino diaspora stories. So.
All right. What about, like, mainstream stuff? Because I'm realizing this is, like, kind of indie stuff.
Yeah, well, there's a show on Netflix called Resurrection Etrugal.
Oh, my gosh.
That I just wanted an excuse to shoehorn in there and talk about, because, you know what? Turkey, Asia Minor, it's still part of Asia.
It's this
Turkish sort of, like, Ottoman historical epic. It's really weird, but
okay,
I love
it.
Okay, so
if you haven't heard, it's a show on Netflix. It's a show out of Turkey. And it's like a multi-season drama.
200 episodes.
It's
or something.
Okay. And so it's like, is it Asian? I don't know, because most of Turkey is in Asia. we won't even get into the who's Asian. But okay, so in season two, that's when like the Asians come in.
The villains of season one, to sort of like a little background, are these French crusaders. So like they're so villainous, French and Italian, and
so
like
you got the Europeans. But in season two, then they're the Mongols. Oh, the Mongols come in, and you're like, whoa! Like so, there's all these like East Asian actors in it, and it's great to see the Asians as like these villains. Mm-hmm. Every time they come
they're
on
so
the screen,
cartoonish.
The music comes in. It's like dun dun dun, Mongols. Like it's so good.
I also think I've only seen one episode that you guys made me watch, but I think it's nice. Once again, the whole white supremacy, like European history has all like the Bruges and all these complex family things. It's like there are
the Borgias.
Yes. Thank you. But there's complex monarchical things that were happening all over the world, not just Europe. So it's nice that this show is showing like how complex the Ottoman Empire and the Mongols and the Crusaders and medieval history just was all over the world, not just in Europe.
Oh, I know something else that's on Netflix in the mainstream media is Ali Wong. She got her two specials out on She's our one Asian sister holding us all up.
And a sitcom in the works with her and Randall Park.
Oh my gosh, it should be funny.
And also a plug for an event I'm hosting tonight. The White Noise Project. It's a poetry reading series that we've got like six featured writers this time.
I like how you just threw that one in there.
What's that?
By the way, Ali Wong and
and my thing.
Just to say.
B, what are you watching or listening to these days?
I feel like I'm a bad Asian.
Oh, bad Asian.
I haven't seen Kim's Convenience. I haven't seen, is it Resurrection? Or I haven't seen that. I'm going to just stay home and binge watch tonight.
Make up for lost time.
Yeah, make up for lost time.
Because, like, the Netflix, I will say, like, you know, they're bringing stuff from all over the world. And, like, they always have a lot of stuff from Asia. Like, there's a lot of Korean dramas on there. I've noticed there's, like, a lot of, like, East Asian kind of, like, Japanese, Korean, Chinese stuff showing up there.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've learned is that if you want the Asians out of Asia, apparently Canada is holding that down.
Yeah.
What is the show about the detective?
I was going to say there's one Neil recommended to me called Little Mosque on the Prairie. That's supposed to be
really
good.
Yeah, there's Little Mosque on the Prairie. And then they have like the one that's the detective, like comedy drama show.
I haven't seen that one yet.
That I don't remember. Is it Indian?
The Indian guy. Yeah. Russell Peters.
Something like that. Indian detective or something like that. Yeah, but they're doing more on the representation than I feel like American Netflix is doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Oh, there's the new one that just came out, To All the Boys.
I used to love. I just watched
that last night.
Okay, what'd you think? Because I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, I mean, if you're looking to watch like a movie geared towards a 13-year-old, maybe watch it. But it was kind of in the background. I've been into watching kind of trashy movies and television lately.
Tell us
so
more.
So that falls perfectly in line with kind of the
what
mindset
you've been
I'm
watching
right now. Yeah.
Is she like the only Asian character on it? As like the main character?
So she's apparently supposed to be half Asian in this family. Like her sisters are both half Asian. Her dad's white, but she's very obviously full Asian. But she's supposed to be playing. Anyway, her race and ethnicity is not really addressed too much. There's some like bits about Korean yogurt, but no, it's more a love story for like a rom-com.
Whatever, Asian sister starring in it, lifting her
Yay.
Up.
But we need space for all that.
Yes,
right?
We do.
Yeah.
I've been hanging out a lot on YouTube, and Christina Wong, first guest of the show, has a new YouTube series called, what is it? Something Cram School.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, with the little girls?
Yes. Oh, it's so heartwarming.
Oh, God. So it has all these, like, children. It's called Radical Cram School.
Yes, that's it.
And they are just, like, speaking in all sorts of the social justice work.
I know. You know?
They look like little Marxist Girl Scouts.
Yeah, basically.
Know,
like, these
so
kids.
And stuff. It's
they
so funny.
They know the feminist language.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of all these kids.
Yeah,
they're
all
about taking
they're
down
do
the
great
white supremacy
in the world.
And stomping out the toxic masculinity.
I know.
Yeah, they make me have hope.
I know.
Hope for the future.
The new generation.
Talking about having resistance and hope for the futures and all the good mm-hmm. stuff that we need to be passing
down. So go
down.
To YouTube, subscribe to Christina Wong's channel.
Go support the Asian sister. But let's mm-hmm. also support our...
Lily Singh cannot be the only one holding it down on YouTube.
Let's support our right. people around here at KBOO. And we're going to go out with... me making sounds here. We're going to go out here on Pacific Underground with... we're going to continue our moment of silence with our 1 minute
silent
of dead
protest.
Air. Because, dude, we need systemic change.
Yes.
Hit it, Sam.
The time is 12 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Friday, August 24th, 2018. More than 500 children remain separated from their families, more than a month after a court-ordered deadline for the Trump administration to reunite the families. 343 of these parents have already been deported, making their chance to reunite with their children extremely difficult. However, federal courts have ordered that the administration find these parents and return them to their children. Many of the children are being held in deplorable conditions in warehouses and detention centers with no communication with or knowledge of where their parents have been taken. Meanwhile, Donald Trump started his day by demanding the Department of Justice target his growing list of political enemies. Senator Bernie Sanders today announced that he will introduce legislation next month that would impose a 100% tax on large employers equal to the amount of federal benefits received by their low-wage workers in an effort to pressure corporate giants into paying a living wage. Under the new legislation, if an Amazon worker receives $300 in food stamps, Amazon would be taxed $300. The tax would apply